The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. Today, we'll attempt to sort out the good information from the bad and set the record straight on your good health. Healthcare and wellness issues can be so confusing these days, with information constantly changing. Let us help you learn what you need to know. Now, here is your host, Dr. Neil Nathan.
Welcome to the cutting edge of health and wellness today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I'd like at this time to thank our sponsors, Research Nutritionals and Beyond Balance, for making this program possible. Since I personally use these products daily in my practice, as our program unfolds, I'll be mentioning some of these products when appropriate. Now, we are live, so please call us if you have any questions during the show to 1-866-472-5792. I'd like to remind you that you can download the Voice America mobile app, and you can find us on iTunes, Google Play Time, and Kindle, all for free. If you're into social media, please like us and share us. We have our own Facebook page, so please go to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today, like us and share us, and you can ask us questions on that site as well, and I'm happy to answer those. If you'd like to consult with me, please see my website, which is www.neilnathanmd.com, and we'll be happy to help you with healthcare questions that are more personal. And with that, I'd like to introduce to you our guest for today, who is John Banta. John is a certified industrial hygienist, CIH, and he brings to our program over two decades in troubleshooting indoor environmental problems. His expertise covers many aspects of indoor air quality, but his specialization is in mold problems in buildings, which I know will be of great interest to our readers. We get our listeners. We get tons of questions about house home remediation, and today is our day for answering those questions. John holds a degree in environmental health science, and he's the author of Extreme Weather Hits Home, Protecting Your Buildings from Climate Change, and the co-author of Prescriptions for a Healthy House, a practical guide for architects, builders, and homeowners. And I have read that book cover to cover, and it's extremely helpful, again, for many of you with questions. So, without further ado, let me introduce John Banta.
Hello, Neil.
Hi, John. Thanks very much for joining us today. Before we get going on our subject today, I did get an email from one of our readers in Southern California who posed the following question, and this is on our subject today. He's very well aware of some of the treatments that we've proposed for treating mold toxicity, and he's also very well aware of how effective those treatments are, but he notes that Dr. Joe Mercola, who also talks a lot about mold toxicity, warns that antifungal treatments are some of the more dangerous pharmaceuticals on the planet due to the similarity between cell membranes of fungal cells and human cells, and also is concerned about the possible damage when the antifungals are being used in this context. And he wanted to know, what are my thoughts about putting Dr. Mercola's concerns in context? And my context would be, Dr. Brewer and I have now treated at least 1,000 patients with this particular model, and we are not seeing any damage to any patients of any concern at all. Yes, the treatment is fraught with difficulty because of the release of toxins into the body, and that's part of the treatment. To partly answer that question, I'm just going to quote from a paper published just this year in the American Journal of Medicine called oral azole antifungal medications and risk of acute liver injury, in which a huge study was done to try to ascertain the risk of liver damage from these medications. And they found that the ones that we use primarily, which are diflucan and itraconazole, also called Sporinox, have the least risk of any liver toxicity, meaning they're really quite safe. Some of the newer medications, like voriconazole and posaconazole, are a little bit more, but they're not finding any extreme risk of liver toxicity in these particular medications. So I hope that will put that particular concern at rest. So with that question, I hopefully answered. John, let's begin by talking about the first question that people have is they have some concerns that their home may be moldy and not safe. So how do you go about beginning the process of looking at addressing that question in the best way possible?
Well, most of my clients already have some inkling that they have a mold problem in their building. They either have had some water damage or mustiness or visible mold, or they've been to see their doctor and it's been suggested that their biomedical parameters have indicated that there's some kind of an exposure going on. And so that's certainly one group of clients that I have. And then another group of clients is made up of renters. And again, they tend to fall into the same categories from the standpoint of they see visible mold or they have some concerns. And then buyers are oftentimes concerned about the home that they're going to buy and whether or not they're getting the full disclosure as to what types of water damage and mold conditions might have existed in the home, and whether they're still there. I think the key principle with regards to mold problems in buildings is it's the water. If you don't have water that's intruded into the building, and if the building hasn't stayed wet for a period of time, then you shouldn't have a mold problem in the building. But molds can last for long periods of time. When they dry out, they go dormant. If they stay dry long enough, then eventually they can die out. Some of them die out relatively quickly over the course of a few months. Others may take years or even decades. But just because mold is dead doesn't necessarily mean that it's safe. And so it always starts with water, and where it ends is with physical removal. We want to get the mold out of the building. And there are two main components with that. There's the area where the mold grew, and then there's the place where the spores have traveled to. And so I use the dandelion analogy oftentimes to help people get a better understanding of this. If you have a dandelion pop up in your yard, that's the area where the growth is, but the seeds can get loose from the dandelion and travel throughout your yard or into your neighbor's yard. And that would be like the mold spores. And so our first and most important goal from the standpoint of getting it under control is to address the growth points, the places that got wet where the mold actually grew. And I'm a big proponent on physical removal as opposed to trying to treat it in some fashion. And then once you've got the source of the infestation taken care of, then we can go about trying to reduce the levels of spores that may have traveled from that area of growth to other parts of the building.
So taking that in, there's a couple of things you said that I was wanting to expand on. When we talked earlier, you mentioned that what people call black mold, Stachybotrys, has an unusual way of, I don't know how to put it, its life cycle is different than some other molds, so that you can get a false sense of security that it's not there by the way it dies off?
Yes. So Stachybotrys, it's a very heavy, sticky spored mold. It tends not to stay in the air for very long. It settles out quite quickly. Over the course of just a few minutes, it's going to be down on the floor. But it requires chronic moisture. It's not like some molds where if they stay wet, the spores stay wet for, you know, 3 or 4 days, they'll germinate and start to grow. It's going to require a more extensive amount of water for a longer period of time. Typically, it's going to need to remain saturated wet for 7 to 12 days in the area, and then it's fairly slow growing once it's germinated, and so it might take 3 or more weeks for it to actually reach a stage where it becomes visible, and it could be a matter of weeks to months before it fully colonizes the various areas. So it's an indicator of chronic water damage. But it's also interesting from the standpoint that it has some very specific nutritional requirements. It likes cellulose basically is old, that's not got a lot of the fresh types of components in it. And so one of its favorite foods is cardboard. And, of course, we have built our homes today by lining them with cardboard. That's what's on gypsum drywall. And so the Stachybotrys loves to use that as a nutritional source. I spent a little bit of time in England a number of years back in 2005, and they really don't see Stachybotrys in the walls and ceilings there the way that we do here in the United States, because gypsum wallboard has not been a common product that they've used over there. Most of their buildings have had actual plaster, and which is much more resilient and doesn't have the food source built into it. But in Europe, they actually do have a problem with Stachybotrys, but it tends to be more common in their carpeting. Most of the carpeting manufactured in Europe still has a jute backing. It's like burlap type of material that the top fibers of the carpet are affixed to. Here in the United States, most of our carpets are manufactured with polypropylene. And so the jute is a favorite food for Stachybotrys in Europe, but we don't see it very frequently here in the United States.
So the Stachybotrys kind of, when you're looking at these molds, what we're alluding to is that each of the different toxic mold species is a little different in terms of its biology, and that it isn't as simple as just running in and doing something, because you kind of need to know what you're treating.
It's a jungle out there. There are literally thousands of different types of molds, and each of them has its own properties. And so just like, you know, if you went to the Serengeti Plains in Africa, you'd expect to see lions and elephants and giraffes and zebra and wildebeest and hippos, and all of these different types of animals have their own niche. They're not crossing over too much, or if they do cross over, then they may become a food source for one another. It's very diverse. And so the same is true with molds. There are a lot of different types of molds that create a lot of different types of toxins. But toxins are not the only things that molds can do. Some of them are manufacturing allergens. Some types have very small spores that can cause a hypersensitivity pneumonitis if just the particles are being inhaled, regardless of whether there's a toxin associated with them or not. And I'm not a doctor, and so I'm typically not looking at them from the standpoint of what health effects they might cause. I'm typically looking at them from the perspective of, where would I expect this particular type of mold to be growing? About 50% of the time, according to EPA, mold conditions in buildings are going to be hidden. If you can see, you know, mold growing on a wall or on a surface, then that's pretty apparent. But in about half the cases, it's not known where they are, and we don't like going in initially and starting to rip out walls and do demolition. For one thing, pulling out walls and doing that kind of destructive investigation can actually cause an increase in the release of spores and cross-contaminate other areas of the house and make things worse and more expensive to deal with. So what I'm typically doing when I go into a home is some initial investigation, find out the history of what's been going on in that building, because oftentimes the occupants have a real good idea of where the problems are. They may just not put the pieces together, and so that's one of the things that I can help doing by connecting some of the various water events that have occurred and the ways they've been dealt with where we're more likely to find the problems. But
let's come back to that in just a minute. For now, I'd like to introduce to our listeners one of our wonderful sponsors who's been with us since the program started, and that is those of Researched Nutritionals. Researched Nutritionals is well known for its specialty immune, energy, and detox formulations that promote a healthier quality of life. They've been doing extensive clinical research on their formulations. And today, I'd like to talk about one of their products called Trifortify Orange. Trifortify Orange is a very absorbable form of reduced glutathione. Now, those of you who followed our mold discussions know that I use glutathione as a part of our diagnostic tool for mold, meaning when I'm getting my mold test from real-time laboratories, it's particularly helpful if we can do what's called a provocation or challenge test by giving 500 milligrams of glutathione twice a day for a week and then collecting the urine. We get much more accurate answers that way. So I'm going to commend to you all the Trifortify Orange as a particularly good form of glutathione. And you can get more information on this by going to ResearchNutritionals.com, or you can call 1-800-755-3402 for more information. And with that, let's go to a break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness. Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com.
We are bombarded daily with information about beauty products and anti-aging treatments. Do you know how they have been tested? Are they truly going to make a change or just take the change out of your pocket? Tune in to Shelley's Show and Tell with host Shelley Hancock. We'll bring you the top-rated skincare products and treatments tested by real transformation skincare centers. We'll motivate you to make the best changes. Listen Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and we're live, and I'm very delighted to be with John Banta, and we are discussing mold toxicity. Particularly, John is as an expert on understanding how to assess mold in homes, and we can talk about what to do about that as the program unfolds. First, I'd like to mention that John and I are going to do an all-day seminar on mold evaluation and toxicity on June 11th. It's going to be held in Santa Rosa. If any of you are interested in attending, or learning more about that, if you go to my website, which is the www.neilnathanmd.com, and go to seminars, you'll get a full understanding of what we're going to cover during that seminar, and we certainly will invite you all to attend if you're interested. So coming back to our subject, John, I know that you wanted to talk a little bit more about when people see black mold. I think your exact words are, you can't judge mold by its color.
That's correct, yes. There are many, many different colors of molds, and a lot of people have focused in on black mold. I think that's because Stachybotrys has had a good press agent and has gotten a lot of attention in the media, but there are quite a number of different molds that can be just as much of a problem as Stachybotrys, and in some cases, even more, because they don't require as much water for as long a period of time in order for the mold to grow. So we see molds that are pink and green and blue and gray and tan and all kinds of colors that that can also be problems. So if somebody asked me to just focus on that black mold, that Stachybotrys stuff, it's not something that I would do just because there can be a lot of other types of problem molds. At the same time, there are certainly a lot of molds that are a normal part of our environment. There are molds that help us produce fermented types of foods, and so we can't think of all molds as being harmful. It's just, I guess, to a certain extent, the dose makes the poison. In the proper quantities, mold can be very helpful. And if we didn't have it in nature, we would be completely buried with all kinds of debris. So it's like nature's garbage man.
Well, and I'd like to also emphasize that when we talk about mold toxicity, and I know this is something that Dr. Shoemaker also emphasizes, it isn't just the mold, it's mold fragments, other bacteria that often, like actinomyces that come with the mold, VOCs coming with it. It's a whole mishmash of the toxins made by the mold that create the toxic response. So I just wanted to make it a little bit less simple in terms of what it is that people are reacting to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Good. So you had started, John, to talk about how you go into a house and start looking at it to figure out where is the problem. And just clinically, let me add before you get rolling, I get into it because my patients are sick, and when we measure their urine and we see that they're loaded with mold toxin, we know they have a problem. It may be a problem that they encountered previously. Their current home or work environment might be fine, but at some point they encountered mold, and for most of them, the mold starts growing in their own body. So when I'm working with patients, I already know they have a mold problem, and that directs me to you to go, okay, is their current environment safe for them?
Yes, yes. So generally, before I ever show up at someone's home, I'm going to spend some time with them talking on the phone about their situation. I like for them to close their home up for about 12 to 24 hours before I arrive. And I know sometimes this is difficult, especially if there are strong musty odors or people aren't feeling well in their home. They like to have plenty of ventilation. That seems to help. But when I go into the building the first time, what I want to try to do is use my senses to get a general impression. And so by having the building closed up for 12 to 24 hours prior to my showing up, that tends to concentrate the musty odors and other things and makes it easier for me to determine where they are. Now, I'm not mold sensitive, or at least no more so than the rest of the general population. My wife, on the other hand, has Lyme and mold sensitivity, so this is one of the reasons that that my practice ended up developing to figure out what we needed to do for her, but of course that was almost 30 years ago. But anyway, when I first show up, the first thing that I want to do is very quickly walk through the whole house. And people usually want to take me straight to where the bad spots are and show me. And I generally prefer to save those for last. And I don't want to dwell in an area. I want to walk very quickly through because I want to be able to use my sense of smell. And unfortunately, that sense of smell, or maybe it's fortunate, I don't know, that the sense of smell disappears quite rapidly. It's like if you go to a bakery first thing in the morning when they're baking the bread and the various pastries, it smells wonderful when you first walk in the door, but by the time you've been in there for a few minutes, you're no longer smelling it. And so I want to be able to make it through the entire house while my nose is still working before it loads up. There are times when, you know, 3 seconds in a room is more than enough for me to make a determination that, yeah, there's an issue in there, and I'm going to want to come back and spend more time to figure it out. There are also situations where I'll be doing my investigation, and I may open the room to an area or open the door to a room in an area, and I'm not going to linger. I'm going to be getting out of there and then getting my respirator and putting that on to go back in and do more of my investigation. But in any case, I'm trying to get that general impression first. From there, I'll typically spend more time with the homeowner or the occupant, finding out the history, finding out what they know about the building, and what their general impressions are. I've learned to trust my clients. They typically have a pretty good knowledge of where they're not feeling well, and more often than not, they're absolutely right with their impressions. So that information is helpful because it helps to focus me in on where I need to be looking. Now, sometimes dealing with mold in a building is like peeling an onion. You got to get the first layer out of the way in order to see if there's a second layer or a third layer or a fourth layer. And so it's a process. Sometimes an initial investigation will reveal all that there is to be revealed, and we can come up with a complete protocol at that point. But that's not always the case, especially if there's been deferred maintenance. And unfortunately, with the recession, the housing crisis that we went through recently and the recession, there are a lot of homes out there on the market that have had deferred maintenance. And the history may not be clear. It may not be disclosed by the current occupants. They may not even know the history. Banks and lenders basically have turned around and sold a lot of homes that have been foreclosed on. A coat of paint may have been slapped over the top or various other cosmetic types of repairs, but the deeper-seated types of conditions may still remain. And those can be the real challenge to find when things have been covered up and there's no history to track it down by. We have some tricks we can use.
John, let me add to that many of my patients who are living, let's say they're renting in a moldy environment, when they look to find another place, to echo what you're saying, many of the rentals around here are hard to find. So the ones that are available are much more likely to be mold-damaged places, and that's why they're available. So it can be really nasty for my patients trying to go from one place to another, going from one moldy environment to another and not getting safe.
Yes. Sometimes people figure, I will find a brand-new building, or the younger it is, the better. There was a study done in the early 2000s that was published in the American Industrial Hygiene Association Journal. They looked at 250-plus buildings that were brand new, had never been occupied, and what they found was that about one out of every five had a mold problem after it was constructed but before it was occupied. So that means 20% of the buildings out there, at least the ones in this study, were a mold problem from the very beginning.
Scary.
Yeah. One of the more common problems was carpet that had been installed over wet concrete slabs before they'd had a chance to cure. But another one that's real interesting and is so easy to prevent if the builders would just do it, if you've got a wet slab, it's going to hold a lot of moisture for a long period of time after it's been poured. It takes almost a year for it to cure. And if the builder installs the sheetrock, the gypsum drywall, so that the edge touches that concrete slab, you can have moisture wick up into that drywall, and you'll end up with mold growing behind the baseboard or inside the wall cavity where you're not able to actually see it without doing some destructive investigation. And yet the cracks, little hope means along the baseboard, a crack the size of a human hair is like a mold, is like a freeway for mold spores. Your typical mold spore is in the 2 to 10 micron size range if we're talking about the ones associated with water damage. And so a human hair is about 70 microns. So you could have, you know, about 10 spores sitting side by side and passing through that that crack if the pressure differentials are drawing them into the structure.
Let the buyer beware.
Very much so. And unfortunately these days, with the way the real estate market is, it's hurry, hurry, hurry. There's rarely adequate time to do the appropriate types of investigations to figure these things out. So oftentimes I have buyers that have to make a decision based on insufficient information. There are some things we can do to help them, but we don't have the full range of tests available to us. And so there's always some guesswork involved. And when that happens, when there is a problem that's hidden, then it's a matter of figuring it out and getting it taken care of.
Okay, let's come back to this again in just a moment, John. But first, let me reintroduce all of our listeners to one of our wonderful sponsors, and that's Beyond Balance. They make a particular product very relevant to what we're talking about today, which is a tincture that helps people's immune systems deal with fungal and mold species particularly well. It's a product I like a lot and use a lot, which is called Mycoregen, M-Y-C-O-R-E-G-E-N. It contains a blend of herbs which are synergistic that supports the body's ability to address fungal issues. All of these have been shown in studies to be helpful, and many of my patients find this a great adjunct in their therapeutic program. So that's Mycoregen, and it's from Beyond Balance. And you can learn more from them by going to www.beyondbalanceinc.com. You can call them at 800-332-7713 for more information. And with that, let's go to another break.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com.
Step by step, you made it through the journey of pregnancy. Now your baby is in your arms and you're on the cusp of a new journey, breastfeeding. As a new parent, you receive a lot of advice, much of it conflicting, some of it outdated. Tune into Born to be Breastfed with host Marie Biancuso to bust through the myths about feeding your baby. Marie and her guests will help you figure out what you can expect and put you on the best and surest path on your breastfeeding journey. Listen every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to the cutting edge of health and wellness today.
Welcome back to our show, the cutting edge of health and wellness today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I am very pleased to be with John Banta, who is an expert on evaluating home mold, and so we can push forward in that particular discussion. John, would you please let our listeners know how they can contact you and your company so if they need your expertise, they can get it more easily?
Certainly. Probably the best way is to go to our website, which is www.restcon.com. RestCon is short for Restoration Consultants, so it's RestCon.com. And click on the investigations button or the meet our consultants button, and that'll take you right to us.
Great. So let's continue our discussion, John, about, okay, you're in a home, you're evaluating it, you've done the sniff test, and now you want to get a better handle on what mold might be present, and documenting that, yep, it's here and it's in this particular area that we need to be looking. So how do you do that?
So we have a number of tools in our kit that we can use. First off, I'm a level one thermographer, so I use infrared cameras and thermal imaging to help look for moisture in the building. I also have a number of different types of moisture meters that I can use. Thermal imaging doesn't see moisture, nor does it see mold. What it sees is temperature differences. And if you have a wet surface, then it's going to be cooler from evaporative cooling than an adjacent dry surface. And so areas that are damp will pop right out on the thermal image. Once we see an area of suspicion, we can take out our moisture meters and check it to see if it's really wet or if it's just missing insulation or some other condition of that nature that's causing it to look cold when in fact it's still dry. Of course, thermal imaging can only find moisture that's there right at that time. And with the drought that we've been going through, a real dry spell, it hasn't been helpful in figuring out where water intrusion from outside of buildings has been coming in. But now with these recent rains that we've been having, been using the thermal imaging a lot to help identify that. It's also good for figuring out plumbing leaks and various other ways that moisture is getting into the building. So if a building gets wet and stays wet for about 3 days, in some cases people are aware of it because a pipe bursts and there are large areas that flood, but in other cases there's that drip, drip, drip that occurs underneath the kitchen sink or in one of the bathroom vanities and could go on for weeks or months before it actually gets discovered. In cases like that, that water may migrate back into the building materials. And over the course of about 3 days, mold spores, which are present everywhere, at normal quantities, will start to germinate. What happens when they germinate, they send out their root-like structures, which we call hyphae. Interestingly enough, mold is not a type of plant. In fact, in some ways, they're more similar to us than they are to plants. Plants use chlorophyll to manufacture their, and photosynthesis to manufacture their foods. Molds have to digest it. And so they emit these acids and enzymes, which is something that, you know, we have in our gut. The difference is they do it outside of their cellular structure, and they're literally bathing in their food. So they're digesting the cellulose, the cardboard or the paper or whatever they're growing on, and then absorbing those nutrients into their cellular structure and continuing to grow. And over the course of several days, they continue to become denser and denser to the point where eventually you'll be able to see them. You have to have about 1 million colony-forming units per square inch of mold in order for it to actually become a density where you can see it. So there are some situations where the mold may not get to that point before it dries out and stops growing. In a good number of cases, we will end up with the visible colonies that show up. But of course, they're more likely to be inside the walls where you can't see than on the outside. And so rather than starting to tear into the building materials at that point, I'll frequently use a wide variety of different sampling techniques to try to figure out, do we have a problem? And if we have a problem, where is that problem located? Now, a lot of consultants like to use air samples. They'll come in and they'll air sample to find out if there's an elevated level of mold. But I personally don't like air sampling for initial investigations where we're trying to figure out if there is a problem or isn't a problem, because air sampling only tells you what's in the air at the instant that sample's taken. And, you know, we may set our sampling equipment up in the center of the room and the spores are up near the ceiling or off on one wall area as opposed to being in the air where they're going to be captured by the sampler. What I prefer is more of an averaging approach, and that's by using dust that has settled down onto the floor surfaces. Mold spores, even the tiniest of them, have some weight, and if you have still air, if you don't have, you know, fans blowing around all the time, they will end up on the floor overnight. So the biggest spores, the Stachybotrys, usually just a few minutes, maybe 5 minutes, and they'll have settled out of the air and be down on the floor. But the smaller ones, the Penicillium and the Aspergillus types of spores, they'll typically take about a foot per hour to settle. And so overnight, they'll have dropped from, you know, an 8-foot ceiling all the way down to the floor. So I'm a big fan of carpet dust for identifying what types of molds are present in the environment. And it gives us a historical idea of what's going on in the building, because those spores have a period of time to settle. So typically what we see is that we get an average of about 30 days. What's been going on in that building over the last 30 days in that particular room or area that we're collecting the carpet dust sample from? We've got a couple of different ways that those dust samples can be analyzed. And one of the newer methods, which is gaining in popularity, is commonly known as ERMI, Environmental Relative Moldiness Index. It's a statistical approach that was developed by the EPA. They basically developed the detection primers for finding specific types of DNA associated with specific types of mold. And so ERMI uses 36 specific primers to identify approximately two dozen molds that are more commonly associated with water damage, and then approximately 10 or so molds that are more commonly associated with the outdoor environment. And they actually do a statistical comparison to try to figure out how moldy the building is, what's its moldiness index. Now, the statistics have some problems. They don't always work. But the value of the data itself, you know, what level of the different types of molds that it's able to identify can oftentimes help not only to tell us that there is or isn't a mold problem, but also gives me some clues as to where I need to be looking. So some of the types of molds that it identifies are more associated with condensation moisture. Others are more associated with gypsum drywall. Some are more common in the soil in a crawl space. Others are more common on woods. And so by understanding the type of mold and where it grows, oftentimes those results will help to lead the investigation in an appropriate direction for figuring out what's going on and where it's going on. Not only that, but if we can do several of them in different locations in the house, we can get an idea as to whether we're looking at a single condition or multiple conditions in different areas. Typically, the spores are going to have the highest degree of settling closer to where the actual growth is. And as you get further from that area, it starts to reduce. And so if you've got a high level of one kind of mold in one part of the building and a high level of a different kind of mold in another part of the building, that may be an indicator that there's two problems going on with moisture as opposed to to a single one. So these are all things that I will take into consideration with my investigations. Now, there from the standpoint of Dr. Shoemaker, there is a way of using the DNA analysis statistically to help determine whether people are more likely to be having mold-related health problems in a building, and it's called HERTSME. It is limited to five specific types of mold primer or DNA. And for what I do, I like the full complement of 36. 36 is better than five. The five may be valuable from a medical standpoint, but from a building diagnostic standpoint, there's a lot left to be desired. So I encourage my clients to have the full 36 panel done as opposed to limiting it. But it's important to realize that...
John, one of the more common issues that we have is often it's the mold that gets into the air system of the home, the HVAC system that's literally spews mold spores out when the heat goes on or when the air conditioning goes on. So
yes.
Could you address that for a second?
Sure. So depending on the part of the country you're in, it can be a worse problem than in other areas. If you're in a humid part of the country, it's not uncommon for the mold to be growing inside the system itself. And certainly air conditioning systems are more likely to have problems with mold growing inside the system than heating systems. So a combined air conditioning and heating system or an air conditioning system alone is more likely to develop condensation issues that can be spread around. But one of the things that we frequently will see is when the cold air return is like right next to the floor, it's not uncommon for the hot water heater or the furnace system to be sitting on a platform right above that plenum area. And if it springs a leak and the water drips down in there, now you've got mold growing in that plenum. And of course it gets sucked up and blown throughout at the house. So earlier I mentioned how, if you have a source in one area, the concentrations are going to be highest in that area. If you have a problem inside the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system itself, we see a completely different pattern. Those spores get blown all over the place in all of the rooms, and so it's more of an equal type of distribution. And so if I see several rooms that have a similar pattern with the same types of organisms, I'm thinking, there might be something going on in the air conditioning or the heating or the ductwork.
Yeah, great. So let's pick this up again in just a few minutes, John. And just for now, let's go to another break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com.
Can grief be good for you? Absolutely. It gets your attention, helping you evaluate your choices and relationships. Your losses define who you are. Tune in each week for Good Grief with host Cheryl Jones. Our show features those who have made incredible transformations by grieving their losses. You'll learn how to find your courage and strength. You'll discover the important things in your life and how to let go of things that are less important. Good Grief airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Abre mi corazón.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to the cutting edge of health and wellness today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and we're talking with John Banta, who is an expert on evaluating homes for mold, which is our subject today. So, John, let's jump right into how we work with ERMI information and what we learn.
Sure. So, I was talking about the 36 organisms that ERMI will provide us information about. It's because it's based on DNA, it will find that DNA, whether it's alive, dead, or dormant. And so it is limited to 36 organisms, and there are literally thousands of different types of mold species out there that could influence our environment. So I also like to simultaneously collect culturable samples. And these samples have to be allowed to grow in an incubator, and then the laboratory microbiologist goes through a process of identifying them. And so to get to a genus level, it usually takes about 2 weeks, and to get to a species level, it usually takes about 4 weeks. Now, I oftentimes have people ask me the difference between the genus and the species, and the example that I use is the house cat and the mountain lion are the same genus. They're both cats. And yet, I'd like to know the species before I open the door to the closet that has either a house cat or a mountain lion in it. So I want to know the species. Is it Felis domesticus, or is it Felis wildcat, let's say. In any case, by culturing them, we can see literally thousands of different types of molds that may be present in the environment and figure out which ones are associated with water damage. However, there is a limitation to what we can find out. ERMI figures out for 36 whether it's alive, dead, or dormant. Culturable figures out for thousands whether they're alive or dormant, but it won't identify those that are dead. Sometimes we run into a problem with people that still are getting sick in their buildings after remediation has been done, and the tests are coming back saying everything's fine. And that's a real problem, because there could be organisms that aren't on the 36 that are found by the DNA that are dead. And so there are things that are being worked on right now, and maybe in a year or two we might have some new tools in our kit that would help alleviate that problem. But for right now, the patient is the ultimate criteria. And this is where it comes back to you, the physician. If somebody is still getting sick, if their biomedical parameters are indicating that they have mold exposure and the tests aren't concurring with that in the building, I still have to believe that there's something going on that we're not capable of figuring out based on the tests.
Point well taken and emphasized. So in the few minutes we have remaining, John, many of my patients ask questions that I don't know how to answer, which is, if my home is moldy and I've got to leave it, what can I safely take with me when I leave that will not re-expose me or my family to mold?
Well, if you think of mold like dust, the spores can settle on just about anything. And so they can get into our clothing, they can get into our bedding, they can get onto our tables and chairs and everything else. But because they are like dust, if you can clean up the dust, you can typically clean up the mold spores. And so here we're talking about that invisible dandelion fluff that settled on the surfaces. We're not talking about our contents actually having things that have grown on them because they've gotten wet. So hard surfaces are very easy to clean. Typically, it's a combination of very detailed HEPA vacuuming and wiping using microfiber cleaning cloths. If the item can tolerate a little bit of dampness, then some water with a few drops of a safe dish detergent. Wring that towel as dry as you can get it, and then that's used for wiping down the object. But if not, then the HEPA vacuuming will typically do the trick. So tables and desks and dressers and and hard surface types of things can generally be cleaned quite readily. Clothing, thin clothing, things that can be professionally laundered or dry cleaned, that removes the spores right along with the dirt and everything else very well. And so those are typically well tolerated when they get taken along. You don't want to be washing them in your own washing machine, because when you put it in the dryer, it could be sucking contaminants from the room back in and cross-contaminating them. The thing that's really tough is the upholstered furnishings and pillows and thick, soft materials. As we squeeze them or sit on them, we push the air out. When we stand up, they suck air back in, and it can suck spores in right along with it. And so if we've been using an item like that for a length of time, it may have some pretty hefty levels of contamination that every time you sit down on it, you get this puff of mold spores coming back off. And so those are things that more frequently need to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis in order to determine, can they be cost-effectively cleaned and salvaged?
And things like papers, that's one of my biggest questions, like what papers are safe to take?
Yeah, so papers can be tricky. You know, if something's been in a filing cabinet or a box, chances are it's been fairly well protected against the dust. And so taking it outside and taking those things that are inside the box or the cabinet out and putting them into a clean box may be all that's required. If things are sitting out and have had spores settle on them, then it can be a little bit trickier. Papers can be cleaned, but that's labor-intensive. A lot of times I ask people to figure out, is this a document that you're going to use over and over again, or is it something that you might need in the future? So, for example, tax time is coming up, and I probably would need my taxes from last year, but I probably wouldn't need the taxes from the last 30 years prior to that, and so I might just keep them packaged up in a box and sealed up in a box. And if I ever needed a particular document for my taxes from 10 years ago, I could pull it out, or I could take it outside and have it pulled out and clean that specific document, as opposed to cleaning all of those hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Well, super. Excellent information. I hope that this is a very useful body of information for a lot of our patients out there with mold toxicity who are listening to this broadcast or will archive it. So a reminder to our listeners that John and I will be doing a whole day seminar on mold toxicity in Santa Rosa on June 11th. So please go to my website to check that out. And John, thank you so much for coming on the program today and sharing your information with us. And for all of our patients out there, our usual, be well.
Thank you again for joining us for the Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Please join Dr. Neil Nathan again next Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And this week, apply what you've learned today to enjoy better health.